Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Great, thank you. It's great to be here. I'm going to share with you some of the work that we've done in partnership with World Economic Forum and also the Global Policy Forum, looking at innovations in primary care from around the world, and focus on one particular example. Great. Let me jump straight into talking about innovation in primary care. We scanned the world to identify where there's some interesting innovations around the world in healthcare, and this is the map of all the innovators that we found. We just focus on the ones that have a primary care orientation. It's a huge number of them, so a great deal of really innovative things are happening from everywhere, from Brazil to Alaska and from California through to China. And over the next hour and 20 minutes, I'll take you through systematically each one of them. I'm going to focus on just one of them, which is from the United States. It's one that I just recently visited. It's not to say that it is from a model that we'd want to copy in terms of the U.S. healthcare system, but I think it's really, really interesting what they're doing. Before I do, let me tell you what the key things that came out from our scan of innovation. We found six things that people have done to be innovative and successful. One of them is to get close to the patient and follow their established behavioral patterns and understand how you can use behavioral economics to shift their behavior. Second is to reinvent the delivery model using proven technologies that are disruptive. And all of those words are important, proven and disruptive technologies. Third is to confront professional assumptions about the workforce and what's the right size and skill base of the workforce and think about shifting patterns. Fourth is to standardize operating procedures, so we have to think about what does the Starbucks of healthcare look like. Fifth is to borrow someone else's assets. And sixth, economically, is open up new revenue streams. So across all of those models, those are six things that came through. Not everyone does every single one of them, but there are different elements. So with that framing, let me go through this case example. I'm going to talk to you about ChenMed. ChenMed is a small but rapidly growing primary care provider based in Florida. They're actually across a few of the other southern states, but Florida is their center of gravity. It delivers care to low and middle income patients who are over 65 and part of the Medicare program. So it's public funds that are paying for this at public rates in the U.S. They have a capitated model where they contract with payers and they take all the risk of providing not just primary care but all care, including hospital care, emergency care, and they get very good results. Let me illustrate each of the six principles. So the first one was get close to the patients. Two specific things that they do. They operate these centers that are in neighborhoods where sorts of people live, but it being in the United States, everyone drives, and then serving an older population, not everyone drives that well. So they have a van that they go out and pick up people and bring them into the center. That can take up to an hour, but because they're all retired and they're low and middle income, they don't particularly mind sitting on the van chatting with each other coming into the center. The impact of that is that because they get the people in and see them, they're not just talking to them on the phone, they have more frequent contact and they have a more personal connection. Another example of what happens once they come in, they have the ability, they have a formulary for each of their centers, and they stock the formulary in the medical center. They have the ability to do e-prescribing, and so dispense within literally a couple of minutes so that they can give the pills with the script literally to the patient, not just a note, and say, you know, take these three times a day. As a result, they have an 85% compliance rate compared to a prevailing average of 42%, and they have a refill rate of 35 days compared to a prevailing rate of 45 days for a 30-day script. They also get a 92% net promoter score, so that means that 96% of patients are favorable, 4% unfavorable, 92% net. It is an absolutely phenomenal number. I think the average is closer to 40. Second thing, they reinvent the delivery model using proven technology. They're using not new technology, but they're using at the absolute cutting edge of it. So just last week, they pushed all of their data into the cloud, and all of their nurses in the centers have got tablets that they use to support the workflow of moving people through the system. As a patient, when you turn up, you've got a card with a barcode on it that's scanned in. You enter into the queue. They keep track of you. They've got a 95%. They want to see 95% of patients within 15 minutes of turning up, and they track you through the system. And the centers have got the feeling of a calm ER. There's lots of stuff happening, but there's no shouting. Everything's moving quietly because they're using technology, so everything is there. Third thing, confront professional assumptions. So each center has about 2,000 patients. They have one operations director. They have four doctors, four primary care physicians. So that is a ratio of about 500, a list size of about 500. They have six supporting staff for each primary care physician. So those... And they all work as a team. They also have specialists that are there on a clinic basis to provide specialist input. And they also think very, very carefully about their talent strategy. So for the primary care physicians, they target people from academic background who like practicing complex medicine, who like working as a team, but may have been getting burnt out in their current job and would like to switch to practice more complex care to be able to focus on the toughest patients. For their operations director, they've decided they need to hire from the hospitality industry. And then within that, they realized it's not just hospitality, but hotels, and with that, actually the Marriott. Because the Marriott has an affinity with lower and middle income class that, for instance, the Four Seasons wouldn't. And those people are very successful in their system. Fourth thing, they standardize operations and operating procedures wherever possible. So... the center, which there's a picture of it down there on the bottom right, that is a layout that they've evolved and now standardized. So there's basically it's a donut there in the middle that has the nurses, healthcare assistants, with computer terminals and tablets. Around the outside, those are consulting rooms for the primary care physicians and the visiting consultants or specialists. Diagnostics is off in the corner. They're copying and pasting that every time they open up a new unit. They then have a defined way that they do things. They embed the protocols in the workflow in the tablet so that they're leveraging the use of the primary care physician, that when someone is roomed by the healthcare assistant, they then, if there are measurements that need to be taken that he or she can take, they do that. If the nurse needs to do some measurements, they do that. That's all programmed into the tablet. So when the physician turns up, everything's ready. They have the discussion about managing their condition. They agree what they need to do. If they need to prescribe anything, they punch it in. It gets brought into them. Here are the meds. Person goes. They also, I already mentioned, they see 95% of patients within 15 minutes. They have 95% continuity of care. The centers are all open from 7:30 in the morning until 4:30 in the afternoon. The only way that you can see a primary care physician is by you either come in or you get on the bus and you come into the center and you see them there. Outside that, there are no extended hours. There is telephone. There's a rota, so the people from each center are covering it. But the choice if you call up is to actually talk about it and say it's not an issue, talk about it and say, you know, do X, Y, Z, talk about it and say, come and see me in the morning, or say you've got to go to hospital. Those are the options. They then peer review every single emergency admission. So they have a case conference. They have three case conferences a week. And they present every emergency admission as a failure and problem solve what could we do to have prevented that, or what could we have done to have prevented that. Fifth thing is borrowing someone else's assets. So they didn't invent a new technology platform. The iPad was there, and the iPhone was there, and they were able to use that, and the cloud was there. So they've been very, very smart about taking that over and integrating it to the maximum extent their own systems. And then sixth, opening up new revenue streams. Typically, in the U.S., a primary care physician might be getting something like $1,000 for primary care with all the visits, because it's a fee-for-service environment. they have capitated at $10,000 per patient. Now, that is actually about average here. My latest work suggests that the amount for, if you exclude specialist care for someone that's in this top 20%, in this country is about £4,500 per head of population. If you make the conversion for currency, that gets you up to 7.5, and you make an allowance for just the higher cost of everything in the U.S., that gets you to about $10,000. So it's a comparable amount. And what they do is they contract with the payer, they take full risk on that, they then put in much more primary care, much more supporting care. They are on the hook for, if anyone goes, they call an ambulance, if they have an emergency admission, they pay that. But that is creating additional revenue that they can do things with. And the results are impressive. So I already mentioned the net promoter score. So 45 is the prevailing average. They have 92 on that net promoter score. The medical possession ratio of having the right drugs, 42%, the prevailing average. They're getting 82%. Hospital admissions per 1,000 population in that comparable population for Medicare, 341, and they're getting 281, 18% lower. Hospital readmissions lower, statins lower. So fantastic, really fantastic results. So just to step back and reflect, what might this mean for London against each of the six things you could think of the question? So getting close to the patients, and I know from Tom talking about going back to the Healthcare for London work, one of the things I thought about is how can we achieve continuity of care, and what would it take if that was really important? Second is to think about the use of technology in the delivery model and the possibility, particularly for staff deployed out at the community health workers and the integration of health and social care. What about tablets that allowed you to capture information live, report it back, overcome all the problems that we have? There are still places where using carbon paper for community health workers is an innovation in London. So I think if we could think about why don't we do something like that? Right-skilling the workforce. So two things there. Could we think about a different model of primary care that had a different list size than 1850? And should we be thinking about a smaller list size for general practice? Or alternatively, can we be using a wider range of other professionals to be caring for the routine care? What would that look like if we did it systematically? We've had the same model for 60 years. Isn't it time to think about changing it? Standardizing operations. So one of the things I know, going talking about out of hospital strategy, what we can do in primary care, the hospital doctors always turn around and say, well, what's your promise? Because our promise is we'll see 95% of patients within 4 hours at A&E. Yours is within 2 days. And what happens if something happens late in the evening? Why can't we see 95% of patients within 15 minutes? Similarly, what would the impact be if we tried to peer review every emergency admission? If you think about this, having to stand up and explain, you wouldn't want to be the person that having to do that very often to explain, well, yet again, I'm the person standing up to say why my patient was admitted to hospital. It was disproportionately more. What can we do with using the new advances in technology, and how do we think about especially with the move to CCGs, where GPs have a much bigger voice in saying how are we going to spend the money, why aren't we taking some of the money that's currently spent on acute care and investing it in more proactive primary care? So that's a quick whistle stop through ChenMed. I think personally I find it a really exciting model. I think there are quite a few challenging things in it, and if you sort of went to copy and paste it, you'd run into some issues, but I think it's worth asking the questions.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.